We are live. What's going on, B? How you doing today, man?
Good, man. Happy to be in this studio today.
That's what's up, man. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. This is episode 3, season 2, By the Block with Brian Chavis. Man.
Season 2.
Absolutely. Hope you guys are enjoying the podcast. Love for you guys to...
We certainly are.
Yeah, we're having a good old time. Yep. Just upgrades after upgrades. We got, the studio's just continually getting better and better.
Absolutely.
We're having fun. We're sipping on our pumpkin spice... drinks right now.
That time of year. Yeah, man.
Exactly. Yeah, man. So today we're going to talk about Park Plaza and some of the renovations that are going on. Before we get into the podcast, just a quick shout out to one of our sponsors, the Multifamily Matrix. Want to say thank you to the Multifamily Matrix for sponsoring this podcast. There are 4 ways to learn inside of the Multifamily Matrix. It's a platform that Brian and I have put together to help you guys, regain your knowledge and actually own and operate multifamily. So we have custom learning paths inside the Multifamily Matrix. You can check out all the different learning paths. There are in-depth courses, certifications, and designations. So make sure you guys check that out as well. As well as live Q&A. So B, we got the live Q&A's every Thursday.
Skill builders, sessions, consulting sessions, tools, resources, spreadsheets,
yep.
Templates. So you need to put together an offering memorandum like one of our members this morning. He's like, hey, found a template in there.
Exactly. Got
the underwriting, spreadsheets, anything, due diligence spreadsheets. Yeah, anything you can think of, it's designed for today's multifamily professional.
And we got our expert workshops as well. So we've got syndication attorneys, legal professionals, the whole nine, you name it, all inside the Matrix. We just invite you to join us. Visit brianchavis.com/matrix. That's brianchavis.com/matrix. We've got some introductory pricing for the Matrix as well. You'll be able to join for as much as your Starbucks budget. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Which, when you consider that the information is comparable to any university.
Right.
Next level. I mean, for your Starbucks, you're getting a college education, basically, for your Starbucks.
Exactly.
Budget. So, yeah, think about that.
Absolutely. So, it's your path to ongoing industry skill development, certifications, and designations. That's the Multifamily Matrix. So, let's get into the podcast, man. So, renovations, Park Plaza. Why are we going to talk about that today, man? What's going on with you and Park Plaza?
Well, I wouldn't quite say renovations. Where is the value today?
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
the better way
Let's
to
take a look
kind
at
of
it. Okay.
frame this podcast.
Right.
Where is the value? Where are we? So, now you're thinking about possible refis. So, operations come into play.
Yeah.
P&Ls, balance sheets, everything comes into play. So, okay. It's really all about what have you done? How have you created value to this point?
Okay.
Being met with opposition like COVID, and why I chose the downtown St. Petersburg market was for, obviously not for something as, devastating
okay.
as COVID. All in all, man, I had planned for some sort of recession. So,
right.
To me, man, this is a real good case study, just how in real time,
right.
How does an operator maneuver, I'm being met with multiple opposition,
right.
Construction class A right. properties coming online.
Yep.
My competitors have caught up. So, the first 2 years you sneak into downtown St.
Absolutely.
Pete.
Absolutely. I remember.
Right?
Yep.
And you were there on the very first day of due diligence filming.
Yep.
Documenting. You sneak in under radar on your competitors, right? But after 6 months, 9 months, a year, You know, it you're no longer sneaking. People right. know. They see your postings. They see you on Facebook and Facebook Marketplace. They, you know, they do their own market research. So they see what you've done to the units. And so your competitors step up their game and start bumping up their rents and, you know, which, you know, creates a great environment. You know, you want your competitors to step up, but also this dilutes your pool. So the Class A, you know, your competitors stepping their game up, dilating your pool.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you're met with COVID.
Right.
So, you know, how does all this affect value? And, you know, when you're looking to possibly, you know, refi and pull, extract that money out and look for another project. So a lot going on.
Absolutely.
A lot going on.
Before we get into the renovations that you've kind of put in place to increase value, some people aren't necessarily looking out for opposition and different things. How can over improvements throw things off in trying to increase value? You know, what are people doing? You know,
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, Nate. Over improving is probably the number one downfall to both. You very seldom find an issue yeah. that plagues both experience, you know, operators and, you know, the beginning operator, like you do over improving.
Right.
And the reason is, could be for several reasons, a lack of understanding your SEOTA process, strategic evaluation of a target area,
right.
targeting that demographic, understanding the demographics and psychographics, then catering your value add project around okay. that information. Okay. And then the other one is more, more complex, right. more challenging in the fact that it's the emotional aspect of it.
Okay.
People overimprove because they get emotional about the property.
Right.
And so they'll begin to improve the property based upon things that they like, not the demographics and psychographics.
Right.
So you've moved away from the demographic and what the SEOTA tells you to do.
Right.
And you've moved into what, no, I'd like to see this or I'd like to see that. And it creeps in everywhere. It creeps right. in what I do.
Okay.
You know, with this particular project, you know, sometimes I have to stop. Is this what my demographic wants to see or is this what Brian wants to see?
Wow. Okay.
These colors, this type of layout or wood floors mm-hmm. or, you know, ceramic or package, you know, when it comes to appliance packages, right, right. you know, stainless steel versus, is this something I want or is this something with my demographic? So you always are struggling with that. And sometimes, you know, both experienced operators and inexperienced alike get overwhelmed with the emotion. And the problem is when you get overwhelmed with the emotional side of the business, when it comes to these value add plays, right. You overimprove for the demographics. So you improve and put X amount of dollars from your CapEx budget into these units and the rent schedules don't support the ability for a payback period. So anytime you do an investment, you always have to be thinking,
right.
how long is it going to take for me to recoup those dollars
okay.
back?
Okay.
And so when you overimprove, sometimes you can't recoup because either the situation has changed, the market has changed, it might have softened, you more competitors, whatever it may be,
right.
you have to be 100% certain when you make those value add plays that, you know, ultimately you're able to, you know, the payback period makes sense. And so, and you have to have an understanding as an asset manager of time value of money.
Right.
And how, how to discount cash flows. You know, these are all asset management formulas that we've covered in our multifamily matrix skill builder, but right. This is where these things come into play. So understanding, you know, what the dollar amount is today and what the dollar amount tomorrow, the dollar is going to be weaker tomorrow.
Right.
Right. So, you know, understanding the time value of money and how to discount cash flows is really important when it comes to improvements. If you're really going to get a true dollar amount. So that's why, you know, a lot of people were questioning why I kind of moved away from, the lower income type of right. projects, Class C projects, and moved into that core.
Okay.
It's because I felt like at this particular moment in time, you know, where housing was headed, yeah. I felt like I could have better insulation against issues like what we're facing right now.
Right.
When it comes to operating these assets and the fluctuations, you know, in a possible recession. And, you know, not to call it the product or project recession proof, but it's just how do you get it to as close as recession proof as possible? And that's what I was doing. So it's a balancing act too, because, you know, now again, right. I'm dealing with my competitors. I'm dealing with Class A. When we bought it, you remember all those cranes were up.
Of course.
Guess what? Those cranes are where now? They're down.
They're down. Yep.
Right. So now they're not only down, those sites now are now, you know, open for business.
Right.
So what does that mean? My demographic is going over there. They're checking out those new apartments, you know? And so you got to kind of figure out how that affects your project.
Of course.
Because I don't have Class A.
Right.
As much as I want to call Park Plaza Class A, it's probably a C-plus in a Class A market.
Yeah.
So there's only so much you can do to over-improve the demographic or to improve the demographic. I'm sorry, the rent schedules and a value add play. You know what I mean? So, absolutely. You know, you got to remember, you're still dealing with the same demographic and psychographic of your prospect tenant.
Yeah.
And so, and understand all the competitors and then understand that Class A and how that affects that individual. So that changes qualifying criteria. That changes, doesn't really change rules and regulations, but it changes qualifying criteria. It changes, you know, things show up on the Monday morning reports, like it affects on the Monday morning reports when I'm looking at rent rolls and I'm looking at, I forgot the name of the report, but you're looking at absorption rate.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, how many leases, how many phone calls, how much traffic, how many units have you shown?
Right.
You know, what's the absorption rate, meaning how many put an application and a deposit in? So you see those time periods begin to get longer and longer.
Right. Right.
Because more competitors in the marketplace. So how does that affect every day your unit sits vacant?
Right.
There's a dollar amount associated with that vacancy.
Right. Right.
You know, it's called loss to lease.
Okay.
And so, you know, all this is, you know, you got all this going on and you know, all these things
right,
that you
right.
do. And then on top of that, let's add a little bit of, or a lot of, you know, a double dose, a teaspoon of COVID-19.
Oh my goodness. Yep.
Right. So, and I predicted more than almost April.
Yeah.
I predicted that the multifamily industry was really, I won't say, fooled, but I'll say they were reluctant to really understand the ramifications of COVID.
Mm.
True operators that have been doing this a long time weren't. A lot of my mentors that in the multifamily industry weren't, but a lot of them are not gurus or experts. You won't find them on social media, right?
Right, right.
A lot of these guys, some of them are even retired. And so, you know, everyone has said, no, you're going to probably in October, November, you're going to see things tick up. And I said this back in April. It's on video.
Mm.
Said this back in April, we were going to have trouble. Multifamily is going to have trouble. And now there's no stimulus. You have the president saying, well, listen, I'm going to hold off on any kind of stimulus, any more stimulus until the election is over.
Wow.
So, you know, people have been paying by credit cards. So first thing I did, Nate, was I started to poll my tenants.
Yep.
I put a questionnaire out. How are you receiving your income? Where are you, you know, in relation to your savings? Personal questions. But I said, if you want to talk about your rent and the possibility of financing a couple of months rent, give me a call and then we can talk one-on-one. So people were calling and I was asking and polling. And a lot of individuals had savings,
right?
That they were depending on going back to work to replenish those savings eventually, and or,
yep,
using their credit card.
Mm.
So what happens when credit card balances or limits start to run out, stimulus runs out? You know, where they were looking to replenish the savings, our savings run out, and you're still not going back to work full time.
Right.
So this is where you have to start looking at the possibility of upticks in delinquencies, and then on top of that, let's throw in that you cannot evict. You know, in the state of Florida right now, I'm speaking in terms of state of Florida.
Yeah.
Not addressing everyone nationwide, but for the most part, in most states, can't evict right now. There's a pause on eviction.
Wow.
And then the thing is, too, even if the governor decides to lift the eviction, I've seen that on CoStar on an article, and then I've seen it in our local news. Even if they decide to lift the eviction pause in the state of Florida, history, documentation shows that evictions come to a halt during the holiday season.
Mm.
So people think even if they lift the eviction stay, there's still, in my opinion, there's still a pause or a stay on the evictions.
Wow.
Because of the holiday season, judges usually never evict during the holiday season, period. End of story. Recession, no recession, great times, bad times. Mm. It doesn't, history shows, call any of your eviction attorneys and ask. History shows that, you know, they're not doing evictions during the holiday season. And where are we right now this month? What month are we coming into?
Yep.
November, yep. The beginning of the holiday season, Nathan. Right. So if you think evictions are going to, you know, you're like, well, don't worry about me. We're just going to get them out. You know, we'll just start evicting them. Okay. If you think, you know, you're coming in the holiday season. So you have all of this working against you. Mm. And so, you know, this is something where this is why asset selection is really important. This is why understanding your CODA process is so important. Understanding building permit activity, household income, average household size, demographics, psychographics, why this stuff is so important, because you have to try to create an avatar of that prospect tenant and understand what is going to affect he or she, and it's going to affect your prospect tenants differently than probably how it's going to affect your personal household. So you can't just, you know, make some blanket assumptions,
right.
You know, so, you know, you really have to dig deep and you really have to understand your asset and understand, you know, how to then, where do you make the changes? Most people may come to this realization, but still not kind of figure out, where do I make the changes?
Right.
Where's the first place that I go, Nate, to stop some of the bleeding?
Mm.
Qualifying criteria. Why? Well, because that's the entry point. You might have to start changing how much you're asking for security deposits, how much, you know, you're asking to, you know, 3 months, three times the rent, certain thing, credit scores, you might have to start changing that a little bit, you know, your requirements. Wow. For the same demographic. So, you know, these are the things that you're going to have to look at. You're going to have to look at how, you know, your collection procedures. It's a lot of things you're going to have to look at now with the evictions and the change and how it's impacting employment and then still impacting. And so what, 90 days or more than 90, almost 100 some odd days ago when I made my predictions from which are extremely accurate.
Mm.
Pat my own self on the back. Extremely accurate, right? Yep. If you don't believe, like I said, go back and look at the recordings.
Absolutely.
So when you consider that I was pretty much spot on, and now I'm telling you now, it's going to, you know, there's a possibility of it getting worse. Now, look, remember what I said? I said there might be a phase two,
mm-hmm.
right? We might come back to a, you might go back to phase two, or you might go back to closing things down. They're starting to look at that in certain states. Disney just laid off more. So Go back to that one video I shot when I'm at Walt Disney World looking at that project that I had purchasedly, I was a consultant on, and then they were looking to sell it a couple of years later. Now we're back there looking at the project. And I said, listen, we gotta walk from this for sure, because I'm not 100% certain on how COVID, I still feel COVID is going to, has another punch.
Right.
Another combination to deliver, right? Might send us back to our knee. Mm. And I don't want to be holding this type of project, right?
Yep.
During this time period, you know, especially with any amount of debt. If I pay cash for it, that's fine. But if there's debt in place, no. You know, there's too many variables that are unknown.
Right.
And this is not political. This is in my opinion.
Right.
You take it for whatever you want to take it. I don't care, red, blue. I'm a strategist. I navigate no matter what color.
Exactly.
I'm an independent. A capitalist. But I'm not confident in this current administration's ability to navigate COVID.
Mm.
Hell, they can't even figure it out for themselves. And they got themselves sick. You know what I mean? In their own damn, you know, offices.
Right.
And I don't care who it is. Right. Red, blue. I'm just calling a spade a spade.
Right.
So if you can't really control it within your own environment, how do I expect for you to control it on a national level? So that affects me as an entrepreneur,
mm.
as an investor in multifamily, because at the end of the day, if I don't have confidence that you're going to get vaccines out and you're going to maintain, stability within the marketplace, that's going to affect what? Employment. And employment, what's 99.9% of net operating income come from? Rent. Where does rent come from? People paying, you know, tenants who pay rent, i.e. with jobs.
Right.
So if the jobs are affected, rent's affected. If rent's affected, NOI is affected. If NOI is affected, then value is affected. Mm. You see where I'm going? So it's
yeah.
This is as soon as you focus on this, it comes a punch out of, you know, your blind side. So you're always having to evaluate the market right now and really understand what you're doing. And this is where operations come in. And this is why spreadsheet jockeys,
right?
You know, this new age of underwriting and spreadsheet jockeys, and everything is based upon underwriting and based on getting your little Excel spreadsheet. Excel spreadsheets don't do a damn thing when it comes to operations. Those numbers can't get out there and lease. Those numbers can't discern demographics and psychographics. It takes operators to do so. It takes skill sets to do so. And spreadsheets are not going to be able to help you. They can provide you a pro forma and ideas and concepts, but they cannot get out there and operate at the end of the day. This is where true operations and true skill sets come into play. Because you got all these things and you sitting there worried about your damn spreadsheet. You got to get your head out of your spreadsheet because somebody's got to get out there and operate.
Right. Yeah, I can. I'm listening to all of this right now, and I'm just thinking about, you know, people that are listening. There might be about to put $50,000 in on a syndication for an over improved A property or whatever. So
you got to hit. I'm hitting pause.
Yeah,
I told you that.
Yep.
I'm hitting pause on, you know, acquisitions unless we can find some really distress.
Yep.
And give it some time. You're gonna see some distress. Let that wave hit, and when that wave comes back, you'll start to see. You'll be able to go in like you pick seashells. When the wave comes back, you're able to go and pick all the little sand dollars.
Right.
You'll be able to pick all the little sand dollars. You'll be able to pick assets out that are in distress because they have zero fundamentals when it comes to the operationals. A lot of folks over the last several years have been getting by on the lack of fundamentals. The market has been carrying a lot of folks.
Right.
Things are going to change.
Well, I want to dive into some of the renovations that you've made for Park Plaza. Before we get into that, there is something that is distressed. It's the like button. We need you guys to hit that like button and raise the value of this podcast.
Please
leave a review.
Please help us out on our podcast. We would love our reviews.
Exactly. Yeah, we need to get this out of distress, and we're trying to raise the value of our podcast. So please like and leave a review. If you've received some value from this, I'm already learning a ton. So real quick, we're going to go through some of these renovations. So starting with the kitchens in Park Plaza, what are some things that you did to make improvements but not go too crazy with it? What are some things that you did to add some value? Well,
to avoid going crazy, you do it in phases.
Okay.
So first phase, I did nothing. Mm. I just, you know, try to renew and do some curb appeal.
Okay.
But to the units themselves, I might've did some minor things, but really nothing.
Okay.
You know, the first 9 months, maybe first, you know, yeah, first 9 months, 6 to 9 months, nothing.
Right.
Allowed a few leases, renewed a few leases. Because I had data, and this is where we're going back to that spreadsheet jockeys. You know, if I was a spreadsheet jockey, I would have just said, oh yeah, let's, and then boom, jump right on into CapEx and start spending, doing what we, no, first 6 to 9 months, I wanted to do research.
Right.
Because I came in the multifamily industry where fundamentals was the principal thing.
Right.
And when I came in, I was trained to first evaluate your prospect tenants, meaning when your tenants come to visit you, you are trying to get as much information out of them as they are out of you about the project.
Right.
Right. And so it took me a minute to poll and ask questions of my prospect tenants. Hey, what do you like to see? What do you want to see in this particular unit? What do you want to see in this particular unit? What would you like to see in this particular unit? You know, getting that information back, polling it, and then putting it into play. So, you know, phase one was a lot of really, you know, fact finding. Phase two was then implementing soft, you know, some of the findings,
right.
Changing the vanities, all the lighting fixtures, the ceiling fans, all of those various different things. There was a lot going on there, you know, and that's when I started implementing in phase two. Phase three, that's where we are now, where the wood floors are coming to place. But I didn't do everything all at once because experience teaches me not to,
okay.
Because your payback period might not. You know, and if I had to do everything at once, boom, we get hit with COVID, you get a slight slowdown.
Right.
And now you're in trouble with your payback period and your return projection. So, you know, you're doing it in phases and understanding how to do it in phases and slightly tick up the rents, you know, get aggressive. I got aggressive. I seen a window where I wanted to get aggressive and I got aggressive.
Nice, okay.
Right before COVID and got really aggressive. You remember.
Yep.
And now, you know, now I'm having to pull back a little bit. And now this month, I'm going to see if I can get, you know, a little more aggressive. I have a lot of data coming in. You know, I reached out to some of my contacts within Franklin Street, commercial broker, you know, to get some of their market data, survey data. I'm doing my own survey data, having our team do our own hands-on survey data. I am using CoStar, pulling all this information together, and then I'm going to kind of sift through it over the next week or so and kind of figure out where I want to be. But I'm going to try to aggressively see what I can do during COVID-19, see where we're at. So I'm going to put something on the market around 965. But remember, I'm starting to change things on a daily basis. So I'm advertising, I'm advertising the price points. I won't say if I'm trying to get $965, I'll say price range between $965-$999.
Okay.
Let the prospect tenant call me. Oh, what's the difference? And then I begin to, you know, depending on where we are and how much traffic, I might go up to the high side, or I might begin to come back down to that 965 or whatever my threshold is. But I leave myself some cushion to be able to talk. If I feel like you're aggressive and you want a place, I feel like I can get you qualified, I might hit you with the 965 where I want to be. If I feel like I've had 6 or 7 calls and I haven't really had a lot of traffic, now I might be where I might come on down to 955.
Okay.
You see, it just depends on our conversation. I'll leave that interpretation, because you can also invest in most operators, most institutional operators now have software, artificial intelligence within the within their property management software now that changes the rent schedules on a minute-to-minute basis, sometimes an hourly basis, right? Or sometimes a minute-to-minute basis.
Right.
It's constantly changing based on occupancy levels, based on the amount of traffic that they're receiving, et cetera, and other market algorithms in the market. So it's constantly changing. So that is something that is, you know, every operator has to look at as possibly, you know, not having just a flat fee, you know, or, you know, just being able to understand that you might have to make certain changes depending on how much traffic you got, and that those changes might, you know, happen on a daily basis. So, you know, between 965 and 999, and then when they call, you figure out where you need to fall in.
Right. So I was going to go down the line and talk about, you know, kitchen, living room, blah, 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 but it seems like it's definitely more than that. Like you said, taking it in phases, and really building this thing out. So,
and just asking what your prospect tenant wants.
Yeah,
so if they want to see certain things in the bedroom, the blinds, the wood floors. Wood floors came up, but I wasn't willing to put that money down. So at phase one, I wasn't ready to go all in like that. But then when the Class A launched, you know, and then my competitors started to see what we were doing and got aggressive.
Yep.
You know, now the wood floors have to come into play. So
As I, you know, had lived through life as a renter, I noticed my landlords never asked me anything about what I want or what I would like, or, you know, why do people not ask those questions? I noticed working with
skill
you,
sets?
I've seen you, you
skill
ask
sets.
Tons of questions.
Skill sets.
Yeah.
Skill sets. It's training.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
You know, so it's training. Mm. I was trained that way. I was trained in the multifamily industry. I was trained by some of the best minds and operators in multifamily,
right?
You know, thousands of units. It has to become a science. It can't be. There's no guesswork in this. You know, there's no guesswork in this. As much as you want to say there's guesswork, and as much as people make it look easy,
right?
It's been the market making folks look easy, but it's not easy to be an operator. It does take skill sets and the ability to say, "Oh, just, you know, let your property manager handle it, or have a third party property management company." Operate your property, you still got to be at an asset manager's level to be able to hire a competent property manager. And even then, as a competent syndicator, investor, whatever it may be, you hire a second party property management company, you still need to implement the management plan and hand them over the management plan and say, this is how you run my property.
Right.
So,
man, learned a lot today.
We always learn when we're in these sessions, man. This is where I feel like I can just sit in this seat.
Yeah, man.
And be me. I don't have to worry about a certain, you know, level of sophistication. I don't have to come off. I never come off a certain. I try to always be me, but I'm just saying this seat when we're in this studio, man, it's just, this is like you and me just having, you know, a conversation. And it just so happens that, globally, everyone, you know, a lot of folks are watching and hopefully learning. But yeah, man, this is real talk. This is, operator's experience from this is an operator's because experience is good.
Yeah.
They say experience is the best teacher. I disagree.
Mm.
Quantifiable, evaluated experience is the best teacher.
Okay.
So experience something, sit back and evaluate, learn. Then, you know, experience can be the best. But if you, I know plenty of people who've experienced something and haven't learned from it. So just because you've experienced a thing doesn't necessarily mean you've learned from that thing. Okay. So, you know, you want to evaluate that experience, understand and learn from it, develop systems, processes to hopefully navigate it when it comes up again, because it always does. It repeats.
Right.
You navigate a little bit better than you did the first time around. So that, I think, was what people get from us in the Matrix. They get from these calls. They get from the sessions that we do every Thursday night. Yep. Shout out to all of our members in the Multifamily Matrix that we'll see tonight. That's what they're getting is experience. There's not much I haven't seen or done. You know, I was there during 9/11. I was there during the Great Recession. I owned. There's thousands of units, you know, in my portfolio, where I manage those, not from an asset manager or an owner operator, but from, you know, at the end of the day, a property manager managing thousands of units. You cannot manage 2,000 units as an operator,
right,
in the grind day to day, and not learn. I mean, you would literally have to be sharp as a marble, you know, it's very difficult for me not to be able to relate to any kind of, you know, situation that our listeners will encounter as an operator. And I think that's what makes us special. I think that's what makes the Multifamily Matrix, our training and certifications, designations, programs. That's what makes it so special. And we've been training for over a decade, almost 17, 18 years now. We've been providing, Housing Authorities, Tampa Housing Authority, winning awards with our education training. Our education training is approved by the state of Florida for continuing education credits. Correct. Not too many people can boast. And then to drop the mic as well, not too many folks have material in the U.S. Library of Congress.
That's true.
So, the education and training that I've created has gone, is in the highest offices in the land. You know, you can go in the U.S. Library of Congress and find Brian Chavis. So at the end of the day, I think that is, and that's accredited, to the experience, my teachers, and my ability to learn and be willing to learn.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, yeah, thank you so much for joining me, be in the studio today, man. And it's just a wealth of knowledge as usual. Once again, we invite you guys to just join us in the Matrix.
I know I'm getting a lot of instant messages. What's the Matrix all about, Brian? Can I see a demo? Yeah. We'll be coming soon. We're working on our demo.
Of course.
So we wanted to polish up a few things and we're working on our demo. So I'll be getting those links out to all of you who have DM'd me about those links. I will get those out to you guys here shortly. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Just shoot me an email, info@brianchavis.com. We'll go ahead and get you a pass into the Matrix. And we look forward to seeing you there soon.
Yeah.
All absolutely. Right. Take care, guys.
All right. Good night.